Warfare doesn't look like it did a generation ago. Once, the only way to win a war involved moving soldiers, seamen, and airmen onto the field of battle. Today, a soldier stationed in Nevada can carry out an airstrike halfway around the world. Drones are an increasingly central part of our nation's military strategy, and drone strikes have raised a lot of political and moral questions for Americans.
Close to 90 countries actually have drones, armed and unarmed, so it is a weapon that's proliferating dramatically.
This is Commonwealth Journal, and I'm your host, Anna Fisher Pinkert. Next, we'll talk with Sonia Kennebec about her new documentary, National Bird, which investigates the human side of drone warfare.
People are killing themselves. There is a trauma that happens with this type of warfare.
That's all ahead on Commonwealth Journal, produced at WUMB with support from UMass Boston. Sonia Kennebec is an investigative journalist with more than 15 years of directing and producing experience. Her first feature-length documentary is National Bird, which investigates drone warfare through the eyes of American drone operators and Afghan victims of drone airstrikes. The film is currently in limited theatrical release and will air on PBS on May 1st. Sonia, thank you for joining us on Commonwealth Journal.
Thank you for having me here.
The first person we meet in the film is Heather Linnebau. Is that the right way to say her name?
Yeah, I actually go by their first name, so okay. I just call her Heather.
How did you meet her?
I found Heather pretty early in my research. I worked for almost 3 years on this film, and I was looking to interview people from the inside who could, you know, talk about the drone program, who worked within it. And then also, I wanted to show the other side, you know, people who are affected by drone strikes in the target countries. And when I started my research in early 2013, there wasn't a lot of information out there. And so I did a mix of real research and detective work. And I came across a photograph of a young woman on some veterans forum, and she was covering up her face with a sheet of paper, and you could only see her eyes. And on the sheet of paper, it said something like, not everything you hear about the drone program is true. I know what I'm talking about. And I was curious if that person, this young woman, was the same person who knows about the drone program. So I was trying to find out who this person was on the photograph that I saw. And I was cross-referencing people, you know, looking on social media, and eventually I came across a small profile photo of Heather, and I recognized her eyes. And I contacted her and said, do you know about the drone program? And she said, yeah, I worked in it. And that was shortly after she had left the military, and about a year before she wrote an op-ed for the Guardian website to talk about her experiences. So I was with her the day she went, you know, like public, basically.
Can you describe Heather a little bit? Because she seems so different from what I expected a drone operator to look or sound like.
Heather is a very young woman. She is from rural Pennsylvania. She enlisted when she was, I think, just 18 or 19 years old. And I know she participated in her first mission, in the first drone mission, when she was 20. And her job was, she was an imagery analyst, which means that she had to analyze the live footage coming from the drones, the live video, and make the call. This person, you know, who I see on this video is a terrorist or a civilian, basically. This person is carrying a weapon or a shovel. And so, you know, this is a very far-reaching decision. And many of the people who work in this position as imagery analysts are very young, you know, first-time enlisted often. So Heather is quite representative. And, yeah, so she's now in her mid-20s, and she served for one enlistment. And, yeah, I mean, when you see her, she looks like a regular, you know, young woman, you know, student maybe. And she often gets, you know, the feedback from people when she tells them that she's actually a military veteran. They say, oh, you know, you don't look that part. But maybe it's because we watch too many of the movies where military veterans are portrayed as these, you know, young men, but there are also women serving in the military.
You use a lot of clips from Air Force ads in the film, recruitment ads. And I think that what you're describing is what most people see as the perception of the Air Force, that it's young men and that drone strikes look sort of like this sci-fi, light up screens and everything. But I think most people don't know what goes into planning and executing a drone strike. So how does that actually work? How does that take place in the Air Force?
I was using these Air Force, or I'm using these Air Force commercials in the film because, you know, that's what gets young people excited. Heather, for example, she saw, you know, the posters with the drones and then the slogan, "It's not science fiction." Mm-hmm. And, you know, she actually wanted to go into the drone program when she enlisted. And these commercial, they look like, you know, video games or, you know, cool sci-fi movies. So, you know, it's all portrayed as this really exciting type of warfare, very clean, very precise. And the way that my protagonists, I have three protagonists in the film, military veterans of the drone program, the way they describe it is that it's often very messy. You know, there is sometimes, you know, a lack of information. The video that is coming from the drones is not always, you know, very clear. There's a lot of, you know, doubt that they are dealing with. And that's, you know, part of what, you know, is their struggle today also after they left the drone program, that, you know, many of the people, you know, who I've interviewed, say that they have this doubt that we target and kill the right people.
And this involves a lot of different roles and a lot of different jobs on any given airstrike. There's not just the analyst, what Heather did, but there are also people who are actually executing the strike, pushing the literal button or trigger. I actually don't know how it works.
With drones, now you have a group of people who are working, you know, within the drone program. So you have a pilot, you know, who navigates the drone from a distance, you know, often halfway across the world, from Nevada, for example. Then you have the sensor operator who moves the camera around and also guides the weapons, you know, the Hellfire missile or the bombs into the target. But then you have the imagery analysts who analyze the live video coming from the drones, and they are really very highly trained to learn how to decipher the video and the images. And they are often at another location, somewhere in the US. And then you have, you know, signals intelligence analysts, you have, you know, other technicians who work on, you know, the DGS, the surveillance system behind the drones, that is part of this, you know, whole drone program. So you have a lot, you know, you have many different positions. And so, you know, it is actually hard to tell, you know, now with this new type of warfare, you know, who is really responsible, if something goes wrong.
I think one of the really moving parts of the film is watching Heather struggle with PTSD. And I think that most people associate PTSD with the experience of being on a battlefield surrounded by physical danger. But you talk about in the film drone pilots and analysts. Heather's an analyst and she's experiencing that. So can you talk about her PTSD experience?
What Heather had to do is not just analyze the footage of the drones, you know, prior to a strike, but she also had to do the assessment afterwards, which means, you know, after, you know, a bomb is being dropped, the drone would continue to loiter, and, you know, it was her job, and analysts like her who would, you know, have to count the body parts, and basically, you know, she says follow through, then watch the families come in and pick up the body parts and bury them and mourn as well. So it's, you know, this is different, you know, to other conventional airstrikes where, you know, an ordnance bomb is being dropped and then, you know, the plane leaves the area. So drones can loiter and they can continue to, watch the area after an ordnance bomb has been dropped. And, that is kind of part what has, you know, something that has, you know, been changing with this type of new warfare. And, you know, no one is saying that the type of trauma, you know, post-traumatic stress disorder, or, you know, some describe it, you know, nowadays more with, like, with moral injury, is the same, you know, that combat soldiers suffer from when they are, you know, in a combat zone. It's, you know, there are some differences. But it is a fact that people who work in a drone program are being affected, because Heather actually lost 3 of her friends and fellow airmen to suicide. So people are killing themselves. There is a trauma that happens with this type of warfare.
You also talked to another sergeant who worked with drones, a former sergeant named Lisa, and she says something really chilling. She says, it's not just one person with one joystick. It's a huge system that spans the globe and can suck up endless amounts of your life and your personal data. How widespread is the use of military drones right now?
That's a very difficult question to answer, because there's still so much secrecy surrounding the drone war. So, you know, all 3 protagonists in my film had top secret clearances. So we had to be very careful about, you know, what we could actually talk about in the film. And that's one of the main reasons I made the film, because I don't think this, you know, the secrecy is right. I think it's very important in a democracy that we have transparency and we have accountability. And I think, you know, in order for society to judge this type of weapon and how effective it is, we need to know numbers, and we need to know how drones are being used, where they are being used, how many people are being killed, how many of these people are civilians. And what, you know, has been released so far is, I recently read the number that close to 90 countries actually have drones, armed and unarmed. So it is a weapon that's proliferating dramatically. It's not a, you know, it's not very, you know, complicated technology. And so, you know, we will have, and we have other countries using armed drones. And then, you know, the U.S. has been using drones, you know, to, we've heard about, you know, of course, these war zones like Iraq and Afghanistan, but also Somalia, Yemen, Pakistan, and more countries. So, yes, it, you know, drones are being used very, very heavily.
The 3 people who spoke to you who had experience in the drone program, they did so with considerable risk to themselves, because, as you said, they have top secret security clearance. How did you get them to come forward and talk on camera?
I think I met all of them at a time when they had already been thinking about speaking about their experiences. And my, you know, my background is in investigative journalism. I have worked on military stories before, and, you know, I've interviewed many people who, you know, suffer from different types of trauma. So, you know, I came with that experience, and I also, from the beginning, I was very careful. I had hired a First Amendment attorney during development of the film. I started working very early on with a whistleblower attorney, Jessen Radek, who's also one of the main legal counsels for Edward Snowden. So I knew about the risks that were involved, and I discussed these risks openly with my protagonist, because I think it's very clear that there is a risk. The Obama administration has been prosecuting more whistleblowers than all previous administrations combined under the Espionage Act. And what we were trying to do, you know, with the film is to make it, you know, during the production, make it as safe as possible. That's why I sought guidance from the whistleblower attorney. But I think, you know, they, you know, all 3 of them, my protagonists, you know, really, you know, wanted to, you know, inform the public. You know, no one becomes a whistleblower to, you know, to for their own, you know, reasons to be public, because it's very difficult to do that and speak out and show your face in front of a camera. So they all have, you know, this, you know, strong, you know, they are all patriots, and they have this, you know, strong moral compass and this urge to, you know, speak the truth and inform the public.
You mentioned Edward Snowden, and at one point in the film, Heather gets compared to Edward Snowden, and like Snowden, you could make an argument that as a whistleblower, she's speaking out in a way that, you know, she's giving information to the public that they might want to know. You can also make the argument that her speaking out is a threat to national security. So how did you walk that line between revealing information that you felt as a documentarian, as an investigator, was important, and being conscious of the fact this is an ongoing program and there are many soldiers' lives at stake in our actions abroad?
In the film, the whistleblower attorney, Justin Radek, actually meets with my protagonist, Heather, and explains to her that being a whistleblower doesn't mean that you have to, you know, reveal classified information. And that's, you know, what some people, you know, don't know. And she actually, the whistleblower attorney explains that, first of all, whistleblowing means to expose waste, fraud, abuse, illegal or criminal activity. And that is a service to the public, but you can expose these things without revealing classified information. And I actually have a disclaimer at the end of my film in the credits where we're actually saying no person in this film disclosed classified material to the filmmakers. And that is really, you know, one of the big differences. We were very careful in the production of this film.
President Obama has touted drone warfare as the best way to avoid killing civilians abroad. And numbers on how many civilians actually get killed in drone strikes is disputed. At the high end, the Bureau of Investigative Journalism puts it at 325 civilians. The White House says 64 civilians. Why is there so much contradictory evidence?
These are very strikingly different numbers. And I think one of the reasons is that it's not really clear who the administration defines as a civilian. And you know, these nonprofit organizations that have been, you know, counting, and, you know, themselves and have been trying to do this independent research, come up with, you know, higher numbers because they really try to count everyone who, you know, we would all consider as a civilian and not just guilty by association or, you know, as an enemy combatant or, there are all these terms that are, I think, really, you know, shrouding things in so much secrecy. And I think, you know, these numbers that the administration has been, you know, publicizing and making public are incredibly low. And in my film, I'm actually looking at one specific drone strike, and I interviewed the survivors and the victims, and this airstrike killed 23 civilians, including children. And I chose the strike because the military actually did an investigation. So, but this was just, you know, one single you know, strike on civilians killed 23 people. And then while we were in Afghanistan, there was another strike that happened. You know, we heard it on the radio, and I also put it in the film, where a group of civilians was being killed, apparently by coalition drones. And they also killed, I think it was 15 members it's civilian members, and I think most of them were from one single family. So, you know, the numbers really seem incredibly low, the public numbers.
And that incident, the 2010 incident that you focus on in the film, you show a clip of General Stanley McChrystal at the time making a statement on Afghan television, taking responsibility for that particular drone strike. So I think that it seems that the military did acknowledge that particular strike as being flawed.
Yes, that's why I chose this strike, because there was an internal military investigation, and the ACLU actually was able to get the investigation file through a Freedom of Information Act request, and the file is almost 2,000 pages long. It includes a transcript, a radio traffic transcript of the drone crew, and they are, you know, throughout these hours when they are watching and tracking, you know, the families that were eventually, targeted, they are just being trigger happy. And I'm actually, you know, looking at, you know, this transcript, during the film, there's a reenactment. And then I also have the medical records. They were also part of the investigation file of every single person who I interviewed in Afghanistan. So I really chose this strike because there was so much information available and information that shows, you know, what can go wrong, you know, when using drones. There's a lot of many mistakes happen through distance, you know, a lack of cultural information, lack of cultural context, you know, these victims' families that were praying and the drone crew in Nevada thought they were preparing for an attack, not really understanding that the daily prayers are part of, you know, the local culture. So, yeah, there are a lot of mistakes that can happen through, you know, relying so much on this technology and not acknowledging that, you know, through this, you know, distance, you know, waging war through a distance, you know, there's a lot of room for failure.
Earlier this year, retired Air Force General Michael Hayden, who served as CIA director during the George W. Bush administration, wrote an op-ed in the New York Times, and here's how he described the drone program in his view. "The program is not perfect, no military program is, but here's the bottom line, it works. I think it's fair to say that the targeted killing program has been the most precise and effective application of firepower in the history of armed conflict." After talking with drone operators, how would you respond to his statement?
I would really like to know how General Hayden measures success. Do we have, you know, less terror now around the world, less wars? You know, from a military strategic perspective, I do understand the advantages because, yes, you're not putting troops on the ground. There's no, you know, immediate danger to, you know, the people fighting the drone war. But then, you know, one of my protagonists actually, you know, has been saying quite, you know, in interviews and in Q&As after our films, you know, what we're doing is fighting terror with terror. And is that really reducing the threat to the United States? And that is, that's really, you know, a question that I would like to ask General Hayden. You know, how does he measure this success? You know, are we really safer now than before? I'm not so sure. And I've heard, you know, other, you know, journalists and experts and also people who I've talked to who worked within the drone program ask the same question. It definitely creates a lot of fear in the target countries because you don't know when you're being watched by drones. You don't know when you're being targeted. So yes, does that really reduce the risk and does it reduce the threat to the United States?
As I was watching the film, one question that kept coming to my mind is every time the military has a new technology, we hear sort of similar things. You know, it's become too easy to kill. And that's something that at least one person says in the film. Could you have said that about guided missiles? Could you have said that about even, you know, with the invention of the machine gun, that we perfect military technology to reduce the risk to our troops and to increase our chances of success in the field? And is this significantly different than any other military technology evolution in our history?
I think you know, you're very right in putting this into context. And I think when you look back at military history, you have these, you know, transformations through new weapons. And I think what we actually should do now is actually look at, you know, the laws and the rules and restrictions around it, because I actually think it's one of these times where military technology has outpaced the, you know, laws and rules and regulations of how these weapons are being used. And with drones, to a certain extent, I think even our morals. And I think it's upon us now to catch up and to, you know, and not just, you know, within, you know, one country, but this is a global weapon now. So there needs to be international regulations. You know, this weapon can be easily used, you know, in places all over the world. And it is proliferating, so it could potentially come back to us. And I think it's, you know, it's very, very important that if this, you know, if this weapon is going to be, you know, used and accepted around the world, that there are laws and rules and regulations that govern the use of drones.
General Stanley McChrystal makes a very brief appearance in your film, I think at a book signing, and he says that drone strikes aren't going anywhere, regardless of whether you're pro or against. They're part of the way that we operate in the military today. So do you think that that's true? And what do you see as the changes that could take place at this point in time around our drone policy?
I think it is very important that, first of all, we have more transparency, because I think our society has to judge with more knowledge if this is the type of warfare that we want. And to make that judgment, we need more information. We need to know how people are being targeted with drones, how many people are being targeted, and what countries, how many people are being killed, how many civilians are being killed, to really make the judgment if this weapon is as effective and safe as many politicians, you know, make us believe. I think that's really the first step. It's, you know, like to have a weapon and use it with so much secrecy around it, just, you know, to me does not sound right. It doesn't sound right to me as a journalist, but it also doesn't sound, you know, right to me as, you know, a person who's, you know, also, you know, part of society. and then, yeah, the next step is that, you know, with more transparency, there has to be international regulation, because, you know, drones are going to be used. It, you know, it is a weapon that, you know, I agree with General McChrystal to a certain extent, that, you know, is effective. And then also, of course, the, you know, unarmed drones can be used for a lot of good things, you know. You can use them for, you know, to find people, you know, after humanitarian disasters, you know, during wildfires, earthquakes. So, you know, there is a good part of this technology, but, you know, with armed drones, there are a lot of risks involved. And the way they are currently being used is on very, very shaky legal ground. And I think it's important that, you know, the world community, you know, establishes, and especially the leading countries who are using, you know, drones right now to target and kill should take the lead in establishing these rules and regulations.
Sonia Kennebec is the director and producer of National Bird, a new documentary about drone warfare. To see where it's playing, you can check out nationalbirdfilm.com. Sonia, thank you so much for joining us on Commonwealth Journal.
Thank you very much for having me here.
Commonwealth Journal is a weekly production of WUMB FM Radio at the University of Massachusetts Boston. Support for this program is provided by UMass Boston, Boston's public research university. Our production engineer is Dave Palmatier. Our executive producer is Patty Domeniconi. You can find us on the web at commonwealthjournal.org. I'm Anna Fisher Pinkert. Tune in next week for another conversation on Commonwealth Journal.